You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the Dressage Today podcast, sponsored by Equestrian Plus. This month, Aviva and I aren't interviewing anyone. We're actually just catching up, the two of us, because we've both been on some pretty big adventures. Aviva just got back from Israel, and we're going to hear all about that trip. And I just got back from USDF convention, so I want to share some of the cool things that I got to learn and some of the cool people I got to meet. As always, if you like what we're doing, make sure to hit the like button, subscribe, and share with your friends. Aviva, good morning.
Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm good. I'm hurtling towards Christmas. My horse feels better. I get back on him. Yay. And I've been on George now a handful of times. Every time gets a little less dicey. So we like all of
good.
It's all good. And we have cool weather. So, you know, cool weather in Florida is always a blessing.
It's pretty cold here in Maryland.
Is it?
little bit of a culture shock to come from. And it was cold in Israel for them. It was in the 60s, but 60s is a whole lot warmer than 30.
Yeah, it was cold in Kentucky. I was like, there is snow on the ground. This is very unique for me.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Oh, so we don't have an Ask the Elk question for this month.
And that's because nobody is submitting questions despite our best efforts. Mm-hmm. So guys, I can't believe you all know everything. Put the screws to me. Ask some questions.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. We look for listener feedback, and there's no question that is below our level of importance. We want to know right from intro level up. If you've got eventing test questions, we can help you with those as well. We would even try delving into the Western dressage questions if we needed to.
Although I'm not very good at those. But we can, if I know in advance, I can check with my WDAA people and get really good answers for us. So
there,
please do feel free.
Yes.
Yep.
Send us some questions. We need all questions. We are going to introduce a new segment that we're
this
calling
is so
Hometown
cool.
Heroes. So talk to us about it, Aviva.
So, you know, we interview really big deal people on this podcast, international competitors, international trainers, you know, fancy people that are a little bit outside the realm of our everyday. And I know that the feedback that I've gotten from some people who listen to the podcast is that they really enjoy listening to Stephanie and Aviva because we're a little bit more relatable than Stephen Peters, for instance. You know, we're not out there on the Olympic stage. We're, you know, slogging it out on, you know, in our own farms and trying to do things. So what we wanted to do was to invite our listeners to submit to us the people who have made a difference in their riding careers. You know, maybe the first person you ever took a lesson with, maybe somebody who took you to your first dressage show, maybe somebody who explained something in such a way that suddenly you know how to sit the trot, but somebody who is special to you, a mentor to you. And then Stephanie and I will get together and contact those people and introduce you to some, quote, regular people, some people that are
awesome.
Relatable, some people who are heroes to everyday people, not just the big heroes.
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound fun?
I think that's going to be great. I think that's...
Yeah.
Because there, you know, it's like grass versus trees. It's all green. It's all making oxygen, but there's way more grass out there than there are trees. And the grass is just as important.
Yep.
That's my grassroots analogy.
I like that.
And
but you know,
if it's not a dressage person specifically either, You know, it could be somebody.
Yeah.
And I always say Harry Whitney, natural horsemanship makes me a better dressage rider every time I go watch him or work with him. So it doesn't have to be a dressage trainer for us to want to talk to them.
Absolutely. So think about it, guys, and come up with the names of the people that meant something to you. And make sure that when you let us know, tell us why they were special to you and give us a contact so that we can get in touch with them. And over the next year, Steph and I will be picking, you know, names of people and doing brief interviews with them to let you know about the grassroots, the grass that's growing, the important people that keep our sport going.
Yes. I'm excited. That's going to be a great segment. So.
Yes, ma'am.
Talk to me about Israel.
So Israel was probably, this trip was probably the most exciting adventure of my entire life.
Wow.
There is nothing about it that I would have changed other than maybe to have gone longer. The way that Israel, excuse me, does things, I've lost my voice because I'm just back. I'm a little bit jet lagged and I talked for a long time. But Israel does things a little bit differently than the U.S. The Israel Equestrian Federation has a dressage committee, and they are organized, I think, a little bit more like the European system than like us. You have to actually test to move up. So I was asked to come to work with people under 18, the younger riders, from starting at Intro C up to third level.
Okay.
And the way that the program that I did was structured was the Federation supplemented lessons, which was really gracious of them. And riders were given a 30-minute spot to do a fix-a-test. And they either rode Intro C, Training 2, First 2, Second 2, or Third 2, or the Children's Team Test, which is an FEI test, mm-hmm. or the Junior Team Test, which is also an FEI test. So if that hasn't confused everybody, I'm sorry.
Because they do use our tests, correct?
They use the USDF tests, but they also use the FEI children and junior tests, which I don't see here in the States. And they're difficult tests. They are interesting sort of hybrids. Like the children's test is sort of a hybrid between first and second. The junior test is sort of a hybrid between third and fourth. So I taught the young riders, but trainers were also offered lessons if they chose. And they were offered a 45-minute just lesson. And I got the opportunity to teach six lessons in addition to the fix-a-tests. So by the end of my 5 days, I had worked with 52 individual horse rider combinations. Every day, we went to at least two stables. So we started, I stayed with a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful member of the dressage committee who I met at the Maccabi Games. Her name, and it's so hard to pronounce because it's spelled D-A-N-A, and it's not Dana, but it's not Donna. It's Donna. So I stayed with her and her husband in their beautiful home in a moshav, a little bit north of Tel Aviv. And the first day we went north and we went through the Golan Heights, which was absolutely amazing. At one point we were climbing in the car and my phone let out a bing and it said to me, "You are now in Jordan and your international calling plan has changed." And of course we weren't in Jordan, but we were close enough that I could see Jordan. So, you know, Israel's small. So I saw lots and lots and lots of stuff. As we drove through the Golan, we saw areas that were cordoned off with yellow signs, and the yellow signs say, "Be careful, landmines." because the Syrians had seeded the ground with landmines and they haven't found them all. So reminders of the wars with an S at the end. Israel is an incredibly beautiful country. It is so much greener and lush than you think about when you think about the fact that it's a desert.
Oh, interesting.
The Israelis have done a remarkable job of irrigating and creating an agrarian culture out of the desert. They grow oranges and they grow apples and they grow bananas and they grow mangoes and lemons and limes and pomelos and almonds and dates, and they raise cattle. You would have loved it. They have beef cattle and dairy cattle. They have chicken. I mean, it's just, it's overwhelming. At one point we were driving down a road and Donna told me that the road was called the road between citrus trees. And everywhere on both sides were orchards. I mean, it's just beautiful. So just, it was amazing. So the things that really, really, I mean, I could talk about this on every single podcast from now until eternity, but I'm going to not do that to you guys. I'm going to tell you about a couple of the things that impressed me the most. What impressed me the most was that every single rider was mounted appropriately. I never worried about a horse spooking. I never worried about a horse bolting. I never worried about somebody being bucked off. The horses are educated. They know their jobs. Similar in some ways to Pony Club, where, you know, a horse knows something and then as it ages, it drops down and different riders who are at a lower level learn. And then it ages a little more and they drop down a bit more so that riders can develop their skills on horses that know stuff, as opposed to trying to develop their skills on a horse that knows nothing. The quality of the riding that I saw took my breath away.
Really?
These riders, oh my goodness, Stephanie. I taught one rider at one barn who has been riding literally since June. Her seat is better than some riders that I've seen who've been riding their whole lives.
Really? What do you think makes the difference?
I think that they have a plan for teaching. Mm-hmm. I think that their riders are like sponges. They want to learn. They came to their lessons with a desire to learn new information. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're beautiful. I felt so honored to be working with children, because this is mostly children, who want to become better, who have a love for dressage and want to learn how to become better dressage riders. It was amazing. And then there's the fact that here I am, some weirdo from the U.S. who does not speak Hebrew, and most of them had pretty good English. I started every lesson, you know, by saying, "How's your English?" And some kids looked at me like deer in the headlights, and you knew they had none.
No.
And then I had a translator. Mm-hmm. Some of them said a little. Some of them said some. Some of them said good. I had scribes, because remember, these were fix-a-tests. I had scribes who listened to me judge in English, mm-hmm. who then translated my words into Hebrew and scribed in Hebrew.
Wow.
It was, the level of sophistication blew me away. Every so often, and it wasn't just the adults who did this. I had kids. I had a 12-year-old who was scribing for me, and at one point she started to cry. And she said, "I got lost. I can't do this." And I said, "You're okay. and one of the adult trainers took over for her. And when I looked back at what she had done so much before she got lost. It was incredible. 12. And, you know, I have English speaking scribes who get lost and they're not transcribing. Yeah. You know, I mean, it was amazing. Every so often, a scribe would say to me, can you put that in a different word? You know, okay. We all as judges have words that we use. You know, if a transition is really fluid, I say fluid. I learned to say smooth. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned to change my judging words to match these people.
It
forced me to think about what did I really want to say as a judge. So it was amazing for me. After every test, you know, it's a fix a test. We talked about what they did well, and we talked about what they needed to do to improve. I have to say, one of the things that I focus on, as our listeners know, here in the States, is accuracy. What does a circle look like? Mm-hmm. Where does it start? Where does it end? I almost never addressed that.
Wow.
Not because I didn't need, not because, you know, it was more than what I needed, but because I didn't need to. I had much more important things to talk about because they were already accurate. I mean, they're already doing things right. They already have the idea. It was just, as I said, the quality of the writing was just breathtaking. The willingness to listen was, it was phenomenal. Really, really nice horses. I never saw an unsound horse.
Really?
52 horses, all sound. Yep. That's not something you see here in the States.
No.
And we're talking about some horses that were old. They're maintaining soundness. You know, they're doing something right. Horsekeeping in Israel is very different than horsekeeping in the U.S., or at least on the East Coast. It's probably more like horsekeeping in Arizona. You know, horses don't get turned out in pastures. They're not, you know, grazing the way we do. It's very, very different, but their horses are sound. Their horses are mostly in good flesh, you know. It's really impressive. Stephanie, it was fabulous.
That's awesome. And to have that variety from intro level to third level, that's a big, there's so many critical pieces.
Yeah.
Encapsulated in that spread.
Yeah. And in this country, I think because we have so many trainers of a high caliber, you know, people get a little bit, I'm not going to ride with this person because they're not an FEI rider, so they can't help me.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have talked a lot about the different skill sets. Judging is one skill set. Riding as a trainer is a skill set. Mm-hmm. Teaching is a skill set. They're different skill sets. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even the trainers came to me open to what I could help them with. And what my very last lesson of the trip was my friend Gal Cohen, who is the one who I leased Dan Dan from for the Maccabiah. So she was, you know, she's an FEI trainer, you know, and she came out and I said, Gal, what am I going to teach you? And she said, I had a baby a year ago. I haven't been riding as much. Help me know that I'm still doing things correctly. And you would be very proud of this, Stephanie. At one point, I said to her, you're leaning back, grow a little taller in your body and help lift him up.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, he changed completely and her whole face lit up. And she said, thank you. That made all the difference. The ability to listen and to learn is such a special skill. And the Israelis that I taught all had it. And it made my job easy. And it made my job satisfying. So what a wonderful experience.
From short training tips to how-to videos and insider access to private clinics and lessons, learn from top dressage experts with Equestrian Plus. Watch exclusive interviews and lectures, slow motion demonstrations, and step-by-step tutorials taught by top-level pros, and explore cross-discipline topics such as groundwork, rider fitness, and stable management. Visit equestrianplus.com to sign up for a 7-day free trial with subscription.
I want to talk a little bit about the food.
Yes, I was going to ask you about the food. Because these are important things.
Oh, it was, you know, I've been trying desperately to lose some weight. And I had finally gotten down a few pounds and I left for Israel. And I said to myself, okay, I'm not dieting, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to eat whatever I eat. And so be it. I want you to know that I came home. I had lost weight. I was never hungry. Okay. I ate like nobody's business. The food is incredible. And, you know, Jews feed you, right? Every stable that I went to, I was met with food. I was met with fresh avocados off the tree. I was met with apples, pears, and oranges from them, from their backyards. I was introduced to the pomelo, which is a phenomenal citrus.
It's a citrus?
It's a citrus. It's sort of like, there are apparently four different types in Israel. The type that I had is sort of like a cross between a grapefruit and an orange. And I thought it had a little bit of a pear taste as well. Just absolutely amazing. At another farm, I was given fresh dates. Oh my God, to die for, dates and almonds. You know, another time I went to a stable and the rider had brought me cheesecake that her mother had made. Aww. Other riders brought the most amazing pastries made out of nuts and honey and sesame seeds. I was not going hungry. I was eating like nobody's business, but the food is so fresh, so not processed. We went to a couple of different Arabic restaurants and we ordered what they call salads. And it's so amazing. You know, they would bring out, you know, almost a dozen what I guess we would call small plates.
Okay.
You know, with fresh, almost, you know, with fresh artichokes in, you know, in mayonnaise and hummus and tahini and, you know, a smoked eggplant and a corn salad and just things that I've never tasted anywhere else. And, you know, I'm not shy about tasting things. So they'd put something on my plate and I'd try it. So I don't like beets. Okay. I don't like beets.
Yeah.
My husband and his family are Ukrainian and they introduced me to borscht, which is beet soup. And I have come to love it, but I don't like beets. And at one of the restaurants we went to, there were beets. And I took a picture and sent them to my husband and then I tried them. Oh my Lord, they were amazing. It was some kind of beets cooked with apples. I'd never tasted anything like it. It was delicious.
Really?
Phenomenal. So whatever was put in front of me, I ate. And everything I enjoyed. At one restaurant, it was so funny. It was an Arabic-Italian restaurant. How's that? So
that's like Mexican,
pizza,
and Chinese food.
Pasta. Yeah, it was not fusion. It was, you know, you could eat Italian or you could eat Arabic. I ended up ordering a risotto that was definitely more Arabic than Italian. That was amazing. But for dessert, we had something called kanafe, which is made with phyllo dough and cheese. And then a simple syrup is poured over it with pistachios. and it sounded not so good. You know, cheese, phyllo, and sugar, you know, that just sort of, it tasted like coconut flan. It was amazing. It was incredible. Everything was amazing. I had the best time. Yep. And I got to see Dan Dan, who at the age of 24 is still going strong. He's still being used in therapeutic riding. He's still being used and shown at first level. He looks great. You know, I'm sure he did not, of course, remember me, but trust me, I brought Misty Mints and he loved them. And he practically trampled me to get to treat. So that was super fun. You know, it was just, again, I could go on forever, but we're not going to go on forever. Everything was perfect. There was nothing that I would change other than, as I said, maybe going for longer.
So that you could get more lessons in, or so that you could see more things?
Both. So okay. My one funny story, and this is the last thing that I'm going to talk about. I mean, we walked on the beach at the Mediterranean. I saw the Sea of Galilee. I walked along the Jordan River. I mean, all of these things. But we went to Nazareth, and it's getting towards Christmas, right? Mm-hmm. And there is a tree in Nazareth that is a landmark. And Donna wanted to take me to see the Christmas tree. And it's outside St. Gabriel's Church, which is one of the most beautiful churches I've ever seen in my life. But we're in Nazareth, and Israel is old. Mm-hmm. And the streets are old. Mm-hmm. And at one point, we were driving down a road, and I swear I am not exaggerating. It was barely the width of the car. It was a two-lane road. Ancient buildings on either side of us. We were going practically straight down, and the road was corkscrewing.
Oh my gosh.
And at one point we went around a corkscrew turn and there was a car stopped. And we stopped, and around the next corkscrew there was a van that had gotten stuck in a hole. So we're stuck. And a guy comes out and he starts stepping on the bumper of the van and bouncing it to get it so that it could bounce out of the hole. And the van bounces out of the hole and off it goes. And the car in front of us, off it goes. And we start to go, and there's a car coming right at us. And there's nowhere to go. We can't back up. So the other car had to back up into this teeny tiny little alley. And we went past. And then we found a place to park, and we went to see the tree, which was really amazing, except that they don't light it until December 14th. Oh. So we were a little early. And then we left. And now we're going straight up. And next to us is the Roman wall that's right along, you know, that's a protecting wall. Mm-hmm. It's as wide as the car, and it's probably 15 feet tall, and it's made of stone. And the sense of history is so incredible, but it was amazing. So for those of you who are my friends on Facebook, lots and lots and lots of pictures, not enough pictures because I was so busy experiencing it that I didn't bother with the camera.
I was going to say, I think I saw horse pictures. Did you get to take many landmark pictures or no?
You know, we drove, I figured it out. We drove 750 miles.
Wow.
Yeah. We covered a lot of ground. We went, as I said, we went to at least two stables a day. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they were, you know, 65, 75 kilometers apart. So we did a lot of driving, and we had to be places at times. So we didn't have a lot of ability to stop and do stuff. You know, we'd be driving along and Anna would say, do you see that hill over there, that tell? So a tell is a very interesting thing. A tell is a hill, but it is a hill that is built by civilizations building on top. So for instance, if you excavate, you find something that's built on top of something else, that's built on top of something else, that's built on top of something else.
Wow.
You know, and you can go down 2,000 years.
Wow.
So at one point we're driving along and she says to me, do you see that tell to the right? And I said, yes. And she said, you see the excavation alongside of it? And I said, yes. And she said, they're working on it, but do you see those structures at the top? And I said, yes. She says, that's Armageddon. That was literally the city of Armageddon.
Really?
I took a picture. You can't see it. But it was truly, it was Armageddon. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
How amazing. How that amazing is that?
It,
you know?
It leaves you speechless.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we wandered around. We went to an old city, an old port city called Akko, which is right on the Mediterranean. And we went through the Turkish market. Mm-hmm. I was so busy, I didn't take pictures.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
you said it. You were experiencing it. You were in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. The hospitality, the generosity, you know, I must have been at probably 10 different stables. Mm. Everyone opened their hearts and themselves to me. I have to say, to those of you who know me, you know, I am a coffee fanatic. Coffee in Israel is really intense. I learned to say I wanted Americano, but even Americano, they call the bottom of it mud. It's a lot of grounds, which I learned. You know, they would bring me my coffee in a glass, not in a mug for the most part. And I drink mine black without sugar. And, you know, I drink and it's delicious. And I get, you know, most of the way down and all of a sudden my mouth is filled with grounds. I called it sludge. They call it mud. So I learned to stop drinking at a certain point. But everybody greeted me with, what can I get you to eat? What can I get you to drink? Mm. You know, the level of hospitality, just amazing. I felt like royalty the entire time. I cannot thank the Dressage Committee of the Israel Equestrian Federation enough for the opportunity that they gave me, for the trust that they put in me to allow me to work with their riders, for the graciousness. I don't know what to say. I get weepy thinking about it.
Well, it sounds like you gave as much, if not more, than you got. And I'm so happy that
I hope
you got
so.
So much out of it. I think that's just outstanding that you got,
you know,
to do that.
One of our last podcasts, we talked about imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And I suffer greatly. And I went feeling like an imposter. And I have to say, I taught 52 people. Everyone looked better at the end. So part of that is, I guess I know what I'm doing.
Yep.
But it's also, I mean, Stephanie, you're an instructor. You have taught lessons where people have been unwilling to try,
mm-hmm.
or unable or closed off. This not only says something about me, this says something about the riders. That 52 people were open enough to try to learn from me, that we made improvements.
Yeah.
That's says something about them too. And I really want to acknowledge how much that says. So
well,
we'll end
well
with that.
Done. Well done, you, and well done all of your Israeli riders.
So let's change things completely now. Talk to me about the convention, since you were there while I was in Israel.
Yes, the convention. So the convention this year was in Kentucky, which makes it a little bit easier for the USDF staff because they're not flying anywhere.
Yeah.
We were in the beautiful Hyatt downtown, and it's downtown Lexington is cool because there's these tubes. So like if I wanted to go to Starbucks, I could literally go from our hotel and go through a tube to get to another building and then go through another tube to get to the hotel that had the Starbucks in it. So that was kind of
how cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I literally didn't go outside from Wednesday when I got there till Saturday when I left, except going through the tubes. And it's cold. It was cold there.
Funny.
Got to see a ton of people that I know, got to meet a ton of new people. I think it was a very energized convention. It's my fourth attending in person. I felt like there was the most interaction amongst the members at the BOG. That's the Board of Governors, where we vote on stuff. My region, Region 3, we actually had, there was like five or six people that came just to see what convention was about. So I have to go because I'm a PM delegate.
Mm-hmm.
But these people just came because they wanted to see what was up. Which
how wonderful is that?
Used to happen a lot more than it does. And they're trying to figure out, they're trying to make some determinants. We had some conversations about future conventions and possibilities. Obviously in 2020, when everything was shut down, we did a virtual. And then in 2021, we were supposed to go to Houston, and very last minute, everybody went, not comfortable. So they pulled the plug and we did another virtual. Those were hugely well attended, like three and four times the number of people that actually come in person.
Now, well, it's expensive and it's hard to take off time.
Both of those things, yes. And I will say, like, Lexington is not a direct route.
No, it's not.
From anywhere. So I flew on an airline that I don't favor flying on, and I was very blessed in my everything went smoothly on the way there. On the way home, that was not the case, but I got home, so that's good. And my luggage got home at the same time. You are not talking to the new Region 3 director. The votes were good. I presented well. I think there was concern about my lack of previous involvement with any committees or anything like that, which I understand.
Yeah.
So our new Region 3 director is Karen Caverly from Georgia Dressage and Combined Training Association. She's done a fabulous job with their GMO, and I think she's going to be a terrific Region 3 director. And I think that she's going to, you know, utilize me when she needs some help. So that all makes me happy.
Good.
I couldn't tell if I wanted to be or if I didn't want to be. But the longer I was there, I was like, this is a really big job.
Maybe this is good. Yeah.
I just kept going, God, this is in your hands. Wherever you want me to be, there's a reason I'm going to be there. And if you want me to have this, then by gum, I'm going to do the best job I could. So I was not unhappy when I did not get it. I was prepared for whatever. There were some, let me look through my notes here. There's some changes that are taking place, you know, GMOs all over, just like every other. And a GMO, for those who don't know, is a group member organization. It's your local dressage club.
Yep.
GMOs everywhere are struggling. Even in my region, Region 3, we have like Karen's Georgia GMO is 750 people. But there's one in either Alabama or Tennessee that only has four people.
Oh.
So I know. Isn't that cute? It's so tiny.
That's so sweet. You know, when I started in dressage, our GMO, Potomac Valley Dressage Association, had 1,200 members.
Wow.
It's under 500 now.
Yeah.
Real sad.
Things are getting more expensive, and people, you know, there's people like me, like I call myself a free agent. I am a PM member. I'm a participating member of USDF, but I'm not associated with any specific club because there's not one in the area.
Yeah.
And I think that there's, you know, that is not unusual. I believe that our number of PM members to GM members, the PMs are slightly higher all over the country. So they were talking about, you know, I guess it's been, I think it was that you were only, a GMO could be a GMO with 25 people, and now they're dropping it to 8 or 4, something like that, to make it still have, you know, have some cachet, some access,
Yeah.
Next year, to end of 2026, we will see another test change. So they are in the process of rewriting the tests again. I'm not going to say this correctly, but there's going to be certain things added as faults that are no longer going to be errors. So, for instance, I believe using your voice is going to be one of those things. That it will be a
fault. So what does a fault mean?
Well, I think at the end, it will be a deduction of some sort of point amount, but it doesn't, you know, like right now it's an error if you use your voice, and 3 errors, you are eliminated.
Yes.
I think that the faults will be taken away in a numerical value, but not necessarily create an elimination.
Okay. That'll be interesting. So
that's one of the things, you know, that we will see on the changes, and some of the directives, the wording on the directives, the what the purpose of this level is, those are going to be changed for next year.
So, question.
Yeah.
I know there has been a lot of discussion about sitting versus rising, the medium and the extension in second level through fourth level. Is that going to change?
I did not hear anything specific about that because they aren't finished with the tests. That was not discussed.
Okay.
However, I'm trying to look. So one of the things that was presented, let me see what else we've got here. Somebody put forth that there should be a master option. That it's not just pro or adult amateur, but there should be a master option. That was discussed.
Ooh, that's me. I'm a master.
See, there you
go. I'm old. I'm vintage. I'm vintage.
If one thing that I thought was a cool program, the Shining Star program. It is a way for people who are USDF members to give notice, to recognize a youth that they find to be outstanding. And again, this is
one of
those things. They don't have to be somebody going to North American Young Riders, you know, conference. They can be somebody that you see at a schooling show who is helping out. Or at a, you know, at a recognized competition, you see one kid helping another kid. They really want to, it's one of the ways that they would like to forward youth recognition, that it's not all about the ribbons, but it's about being a good competitor and a good horse person. So the Shining Star program is something that definitely people should take a look at.
Okay.
You know, there's some questions floating around about convention, how they're going to go forward with it. I was never privy to some of the conventions of the past, but I know that there used to be there'd be a big thing, you know, whether it was, I heard that there was like cow poop tossing or something at a previous one.
Oh, you know, my goodness.
And there was like, there was like mechanical bull riding. And I know that they've had, you know, big names come in to do symposiums before. That has gone by the wayside. And there was a pretty big group of people that were like, hey, we want some of that back. So okay. That was cool. There are rule changes in dressage, and I'm just going to go over the basic chapters. Some of these are just like simplifying the words.
Okay.
So DR 119, DR 121, 122, 124, DR 125, and 126. Take a look at those. You'll see some rule changes. General rules that will affect us. GR 1006, GR 843, GR 310, GR 202, GR 414, and GR 843 again. There are some proposed rule changes. So these have not taken place yet. They will be handled at the next USEF meeting, which I think is in January. There is discussion. And these have been put forward by members.
Okay.
Someone put forward a suggestion to take double bridles out of third level.
Okay.
So there was a lot of hubbub about that. And what I was told is the reason that the double bridle was allowed for third level is because the junior tests, which are approximate to third level tests, they are allowed to ride in a double bridle for the FEI junior tests. So if they're on a horse that they're doing the junior test and they also wanted to do a standard dressage test, it would put them in the third level tests, and that's one of the reasons why this was included. Okay. So now they're talking about taking it out. There was talk about, this will be interesting going back to our conversation with Beth Haste about bidding. There was talk about the allowing or creating the rule that the maximum forward mouthpiece of a curb can be 45 degrees. And that has something to do with the tongue pressure and making sure that there's not too much tongue pressure going on.
Okay.
This is interesting. Somebody put a rule forward that, you know, right now if you ride in a championship, regionals, nationals, finals, you are the only one that can ride your horse, except your groom on a long rein. And since I am my groom, that doesn't help me.
Yes. Yes, I'm my own groom too. Yeah.
There is discussion about allowing someone else, like your trainer, to be able to ride your horse at championships.
Interesting.
It is interesting. I don't know. The print was really small. It was hard to read, you know, the reasoning behind all of these things. But I thought that I'm not personally in favor of that, because I think that it takes, you know, if you got yourself qualified, you should also be able to get yourself through championships.
Except if you got qualified, your trainer might have been warming your horse up.
Well, and that makes me think about what you said about over in Israel, how they have a system that you have to qualify to move to the next level. I don't think that that's ever going to take place here. I know even Allie Brock mentioned it in the last USDF convention, USDF Connections magazine, that it might be something that would be helpful for our dressage community. But I think we're such a big country that that's not going to ever take place. And then the final rule, they're talking about the segmented crown pieces, because, you know, right now the quote ergonomically separated crown pieces that has padding on either side, but then has a space where the the mane goes, where the spine essentially goes, the pole, that that's not allowed. They're talking about making a change so that those segmented crown pieces will be allowed. So those are proposed rules.
Okay.
There wasn't anything, you know, specifically.
Okay. So we need to wait a little bit.
January on those. Yes. I got to see some, I'm trying to think about the interesting, the gentleman that I presented with last year, we presented on the virtual learning. He did a great presentation on preparing the dressage athlete, meaning the rider. And he did a presentation all by himself this year. He is a fitness coach. He used to be a fitness coach for professional teams, professional football teams, college teams. And he has switched his business over to the business of training riders almost exclusively.
Wow.
And so he's got all this cool equipment that he can use to measure where you are unequal, you know, where you might be pushing off with one foot more than the other foot or applying more, you know. So it's really cool to hear that there's those kind of pieces of equipment and tools for analysis out there now for riders. And he does travel. But he gave us some cool exercises. He said, these will help anybody. And one of them, and I kind of felt shamed as a biomechanics coach for not ever really dealing with this. One of them was to strengthen your neck muscles.
Interesting.
It wasn't a very flattering picture. The picture of the woman he showed, she had several chins, not because she really had chins, but because of the way she was, you know, doing this exercise. But he said it will make a huge change in your whole posture doing these neck exercises. So I thought he did a great job. It was very informative. It was very funny. And that was Tony Sandoval. So Coach Sando Training.
Interesting.
He's doing really good things for riders at all levels, not just professionals.
Fabulous.
So overall, I had a great time. They had their first inaugural stick horse competition at the Friday night party. They laid
Who
out
won?
A little. I don't know that we had a winner. I think because it was inaugural, it was more of just a demo.
Okay.
But we had the judge Gwen Kaaloa from Colorado. She mm-hmm. did a musical freestyle to some Hawaiian Ooh. Music, which is her heritage.
Fun. Yep.
Lisa L. Ramey, who is another judge, did a Captain Hook dress-up freestyle, and she actually had a seahorse. It was very cute. And then there was
two
quadrilles put together. Region 6 Young Rider team was there. We saw some judges getting together and doing some pas de deux and pas de trois. So it was pretty fun to watch. It was pretty fun to watch. So I hugely encourage people to go to convention. One of the things that I felt the last day that we were voting, and you know, it's kind of, I've said this before, the more I train horses, the more I think that it's like reading the Bible. The more I read the Bible, I think it's like training horses. You know, we've got these guidelines and you're just trying to figure out where you fall in the guidelines. And one of the things at church that they always say is, you know, we're better together. Where there is more than two, you know, great things happen. And I felt that way at convention this year. I was like listening to everybody's voices and everybody was so passionate. And I was like, this is what we need, is more people from different areas together in rooms like this, sharing ideas and not even necessarily agreeing, but it was such a think tank.
That's great.
It was very
energizing.
It was energizing and you felt heard.
That's great.
So I enjoyed it tremendously. So. And I did get to spend some time. He might be fun to interview at a future podcast. I got to spend some time with Robert Higgins, who has been a major figure for a very long time in dressage in Florida, so Region 3 dressage, and he was inducted into the USDF Hall of Fame Saturday night at the gala. So that was
How lovely.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Great, great man. Just some funny stories, some very funny stories. So I had a good time.
Yay.
I'm still just a PM delegate, but I have, phone numbers of important people. So if you've got something you'd like shared or an idea or a complaint, contact your PM delegate. It's kind of like calling your congressman. We are your congressman for dressage. So that's
so it's been an active month, and we're getting ready to come into the entire holiday season and start a new year.
Yes.
And we're excited to start a new year with our listeners.
We are.
And with some Ask the L questions and some hometown heroes. Yeah, hint, hint. And some hometown heroes. So there we go.
There we go.
There we go.
So, my friend, and I hope
I am grateful for you as well. And I wish you the happiest of holidays and the best with Dante and George and all the cows.
All the cows. It's funny. While I was listening to you, I'm looking out and there was a baby cow and two cowbirds, the white egrets. And they were playing. They literally were just playing with, he was chasing one and then the other one would run up behind him. And it was, it's always fun and interesting here. I don't have any new babies in my stable. So that's good. Everybody's moms are doing what they're supposed to be doing. So we are very thankful
wonderful
as well. So everybody have a safe, productive holiday. Don't eat more Christmas cookies and eggnogs than your horse can carry.